Back When.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another bonus episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. Yes, I am. And with me tonight is none other than the Druid himself.
Yes, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
The Druid abides.
Yes, I am abiding that joke.
We are today going to be picking up where we left off in the last Peter Capaldi Series 8 retrospective bonus episode. Something, retrospective conclusion, whatever, something.
Yeah, waffling about recent history.
Exactly. We're soon going to start up Season 9. It's trending on Twitter right now. Yeah, we're just trying to ride the wave, I think.
While being weeks away?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you haven't listened to the last Capaldi special, in that one, we went through episodes 1 to 6 of Season 8. So that's Deep Breath to The Caretaker. If you want to hear us waffle on about those, you should listen to that episode. We even had a special guest. Is that special guest with us today?
Well, he was so quiet before, I don't know.
Oh, he may not be here anymore.
Is he going to materialise? I mean, he could. He could walk in at any moment, but
that's very true.
I don't see.
Who knows? We'll see. We're going to go through episodes 7 to 12, starting with Kill the Moon, and then just give it a very quick synopsis, I guess. Talk about whatever our impressions were. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, who gives a crap, we'll see. And then there are a few themes that we didn't really discuss in the first bonus episode, so we might pick up on those today.
Yeah. I want you to hold me strictly also to a simple rating mechanism, because last time you said thumbs up and thumbs down is as big as it's going to get, and then I suddenly started clamoring for extra thumbs and thumbs at various degrees.
I liked it. I thought that was very clever of you. You took a very basic concept and you turned it into this incredibly complex mechanism.
It's not so much clever as devious, I think. I would like to dwell in a realm of simple purity, of thumb up, thumb down, and only in the most extreme cases of ambiguity, thumb in the middle.
Fine, let's do that. I want to say one more thing, actually, on the thumbs up, thumbs down note.
Can I have mine back?
We will not be going through the Capaldi Christmas special, Last Christmas, today, because Who Back When has already reviewed it, so you should totally check out that episode. If you are listening to us right now purely in anticipation of hearing what we think of that Christmas special, sorry, just listen to that old one. But also, what I wanted to say was, spoiler alert, at the end of that bonus episode, we went through all of Series 8 and gave it thumbs up and thumbs down.
Oh.
And at the time, I literally just gave it thumbs up, because I was ecstatic. So
it's an interesting psychological experiment.
Something has happened since then, yeah.
Your brain is changing over time, you're rewriting your own personal history.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, they could use this in a scientific study.
Oh, they could use this as material. We could make it a great Doctor Who episode.
Yes.
I say great in
Capaldi.
I'm not going to say anymore.
Capaldi would love it as the most scientific, rational doctor, self-proclaimed, of them all.
Have you said that?
Number of times Clara will turn to him in this series, faced with something confusing or some need to scrutinise evidence, and he'll turn to her and he'll say almost as a quick catchphrase, think rational. Something similar along those lines. The point being that thinking and science are everything.
The first episode in line to be reviewed today actually starts off with something along those lines.
Does it?
Yes.
Oh, I must be right then.
Oh, you are right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to jump right into this. The first episode in line today is Episode 7, Kill the Moon, which starts with them materialising. Stop me if I'm wrong, if I'm thinking of a different episode. But if I'm not mistaken, it starts with them materialising in a room somewhere. They don't really know where it is. Turns out they're in, I guess, a space shuttle or a space station on the moon. And Capaldi immediately starts jumping around because he's, like, testing gravity. But it goes from him being totally wibbly-wobbly, jumping around. Like, does he have a yo-yo? I can't remember if he has a yo-yo. He basically is as silly as can be,
right.
But it turns out he's performing a science experiment.
He's gathering data
in
the funnest way possible.
So funny.
But I have one question. Who are they?
Who are they?
They land on the moon.
Oh, right, sorry.
Who land on the moon, Leon?
Yes, okay, so this is... I can't really remember. You'll know this better than I, Drood. I think I insinuated that there is a certain element of this episode that I hate. That I absolutely abhor.
I just wanted to bring that to the surface right away.
Well, thank you for being a voice of positivity in this episode. I hate the fact that the girl who was just like someone, some pupil at Coal Hill School, all of a sudden she gets to be a companion. All of a sudden she's aboard the TARDIS. She's on the moon. She's in the middle of this adventure.
She's just being rewarded for being the most intrusive and disrespectful of the Doctor's personal boundaries.
She's Bart Simpson. Like, she is a total menace in the last episode. episode, right?
Yeah.
She's just in the way. She gets to be a companion. That pisses me off.
She is undeveloped human garbage in the last episode.
Oh, does he say that?
No.
Oh, I see.
No, that's
it just sounded like something you might say.
Something I might say, yeah. I regret that now. But you hate her. You drove me to it. So, yes, apparently anyone can just catch a ride with the Doctor and he'll take them wherever they want to go.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, don't get me wrong, I think she did spiffingly. Like, she was a great temporary companion, but my beef is that she didn't do anything to deserve it. She didn't even go so far as to be kidnapped by the Doctor. He, like, literally went, "You're a kid, I'm going to do something nice for you."
Well,
fuck that.
Look at it from the perspective of kids. I mean, obviously, loads of people grow up to be egomaniacs.
Mm.
But kids, I don't think kids have their egomania fully developed when they're at the age they might start watching Doctor Who. And so they might think, how could the Doctor possibly relate to me with all his glory and adventures?
But it turns out,
I'm just sitting on the sofa. But random nosy kid can get into the TARDIS. That could happen to me. Holy shit, maybe my mum will take me to Cardiff and we can go round the exhibition.
I think that's spot on. I think that's exactly what they tried to do and probably succeeded in doing. But for the rest of us, for those of us who aren't kids, suddenly opening our eyes to the possibility of, hey, maybe the Doctor's going to materialize in my bedroom tonight. Oh, that's maybe weird. Maybe I should call someone. But, like, regardless, phrasing, I apologize. But for the rest of us, no, I'm sorry, it's a pisser offer. Yeah, sorry. Mm. That's just my opinion.
There's no precedent for it the showrunner could call upon his defense.
Well, I mean, the Doctor used to kidnap people left, right and center.
Yeah,
and it turned out, like, oh, actually, they were chuffed to be there. Like, in Classic, we recently had Dodo, aka Dildo, who showed up on the show literally just by running into the police box because she was so fucking dumb that even when she was inside the TARDIS and saw that it was bigger on the inside, she still thought it was a police box, and he just closed the doors and dematerialized. Was like, yeah, well, let's go on an adventure.
You can learn on the way.
Yeah. And that was fine. I mean, okay, I hated her and everyone hated her, but still, that was sort of accepted. This is pretty close to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't accept it anymore. Anyway, back to the episode. What did you think of the episode?
Well, yes, one of these things again.
Yeah.
The episode from 10 maybe months ago.
Shall we summarize it very quickly?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so they materialize on the moon. Something's going on with the gravitational pull. Gravity on the moon is a little bit off. It's increasing in mass, right? The moon is increasing in mass.
Yeah.
And it's affecting the Earth.
By orders of magnitude, I think.
Yeah.
It's going up a whole lot.
Yeah, exactly. So now a bunch of astronauts, human astronauts, are on the moon. And I think they're planning on detonating it because possibly that will save the Earth. But, like, I'm sorry, won't that fuck the Earth over loads as well? Anyway, it turns out there are all these weird, creepy crawlies on the moon. Spoiler alert, they're like germs, but huge. And the moon is basically an egg, which towards the end hatches. Boom. Done.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I would have liked the boom to have come a lot earlier and for them to have blown up the moon rather than for it to be revealed it was an egg. I mean, obviously, the Doctor loves giant reptiles. That was clear from the first episode.
Okay. Do we still have months? Do we still have tides on the Earth after the moon has hatched and been replaced by an infinitely smaller moon? Clearly with a different gravitational pull, right?
As in the hatched egg beast.
Like, immediately laid another egg.
Yeah, they deposit another moon.
Yeah, which is smaller.
Which must be smaller.
Yeah, it must be smaller. Obviously it's smaller. So,
well, obviously the moon isn't a fucking giant reptile, but
so it's not an egg.
Obviously gravity just wouldn't increase because something is
growing inside of it.
What's already in its egg for it to nosh on.
Sure, but maybe this is how this creature evolves. Who knows? Maybe.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean,
I'm only quibbling, you know, like a fundamental law of physics.
Yeah,
you know,
mass isn't just created out of nothing. Like, it's changing in there, but it's not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something that did bother me a bit about this episode and perhaps this series, that the Doctor is more than ever focused on being a hyper-rational, super scientist, 21st century, very knowledgeable Doctor. Everything has to be nailed on correct. And yet they're just pulling crazy stunts like this with fundamental physical truths.
I'm more pissed off by gravity. Mm. As in, I'm more pissed off by the fact that the humans are like, well, I'm happy to blow this thing up. because the fact that the moon is bigger is causing problems. But maybe if we blow it up and we have no more moon, that's not going to cause a problem.
Yeah,
that's
maybe if enormous
garbage.
Maybe if enormous chunks of it just rain to Earth unpredictably for the next 100 years.
There is that as well. I hadn't even considered that. Okay, got a question for you also about something that happens in this episode.
Yeah.
There's that moment where the Doctor doesn't want to get involved. Like, there's one astronaut who wants to blow it up, and then there's Clara, who, I guess, reasons we shouldn't blow this up, and they put it to the Earth. You know, like, turn off your lights or something like that. Turn off your lights if you want this thing to survive.
Yeah, it's like change.org taken to the next level.
Yeah. And the Doctor doesn't want to get involved. There's even that bit where he goes, like, this isn't my world, I'm not gonna make this choice. You're both from Earth, you make this choice, and he disappears. Mm-hmm. And lots of people, like, totally hated him for it. And Clara hated him for it for a good long while. In fact, possibly still does. I can't really remember. But, yeah.
Oh, she has a lot of complex simmering resentments and also wide-ons for the Doctor reconcile
incredibly
in that fevered mind of her.
So what do you think? Do you think he should have got involved?
I think it certainly made for a dramatic few moments. Whether that's the behaviour you expect of the Doctor, I don't really know. What was his reasoning for
that? I feel like he gets involved all the time.
Well, yeah, if he hadn't been involved dozens of times over the history of Who, then the Earth would be annihilated in every single dimension, like at the end of Hitchhikers.
Yeah, true.
So for him to abdicate all responsibility now in the name of some strange one-off global democratic event is a bit odd.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
Is there more to it than he's the new Doctor and he's grumpier than before and you don't know what to expect of him? Is part of this to make him more unpredictable? Because
maybe, but also, oh, I don't know, man. Maybe he actually didn't know what was going to happen and he figured, well, I don't want to take responsibility for this. Whenever you guys look up at the sky, you should take responsibility for whatever it is you see. Because doesn't he even say, like, oh, maybe you blow this up and for a million years you're going to look up at the sky and there's going to be a carcass floating up around in space in orbit.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Maybe he just doesn't want to get involved because he doesn't know what's happening. Either way, I think fair enough. Fuck it. It's not his world. That's okay.
Well, then he can fuck off back to Gallifrey then. And once he's found it, he can spend...
I was gonna say, oh, if only he could.
Yeah, he can spend more time looking at the maps in greater detail and listening out for wibbly-wobbly, floaty-woaty, orangey-orangey clues coming in from the crack at the edge of the universe. And maybe he can just go there and retire.
Okay. All right. Summa summarum, what did you think of this episode? Where's your thumb, man?
My thumb is down for this one.
It's down?
It is. It's
okay.
Just because... Well, there are a lot of becauses.
Okay.
Not that I can remember them all. Heavily cut this bit. I think that the big reveal of the just-born moon reptile, for want of a better description...
Sure.
Could have been better. I don't remember seeing it except in sort of far-off shots, and then suddenly the new moon is deposited.
Yeah, there's just this one shot of it crawling out of its shell and then flying away,
yeah.
I think.
Obviously, it's hard to... to do good perspective shots when you're dealing with something the size of a small planet. But even so, I think they could have maybe made it a bit more majestic than it was.
Okay.
And
fair enough.
The end is the bit that sticks with you most of the time, especially when it's a sort of deflating one like this.
Okay. All right. I've forgotten now. Am I allowed to have a thumb in the middle?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm giving this a thumb in the middle because I think I like the fact that the moon is an egg. I really, really like that. I'm expecting the Doctor in some future episode to go into a time before that time, stay on Earth, look up at the sky, see the moon and go, oh, yeah, that's an egg. Because now we know that. I'm looking forward to that happening. I like that there's a monster living, or like a monster. I like that there's a creature living inside the moon or growing inside the moon because it feels kind of silly, to be honest. And it almost harkens back to classic Who. It's like, it's just a little bit silly. We'll take something familiar and we'll Whoify it. What I'm voting this down for, or rating this down for, is the goddamn girl who just hitches a ride for no, like, she doesn't deserve it, okay? She doesn't deserve it. I'm going to be that kid. I'm going to be the kid who goes, why her? Why not me? If she had been more charismatic or whatever. If she had been helpful in the last episode, I would have got it. I would have appreciated this. But she wasn't, so she doesn't deserve it. Sorry.
Yeah, why doesn't he take everyone else on a school trip?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm also rating this down a little bit for all the emotional turmoil that arises from his not wanting to get involved. Because Clara should just fucking grow some nuts and deal with it. Yeah, so it's a moral conundrum, and then you put it to the Earth and fine, done. basta. Don't always rely on this magical wizard guy.
Yeah, Rose would have picked an expression and stuck with it and taken that course of action through to its logical conclusion without any fuss.
Do you want to give me an example?
No.
Okay.
And two other things that I'm going to bolster my downrating of this is that, I mean, I'm putting words in the writer's, if not his mouth, then his life. When I assumed that the idea came to them of, let's make the moon an egg and work backwards from that. And then the episode ends as it does, seemingly because they didn't work forwards from it at all. Are humanity not going to shit themselves that there's a second moon that they now know is clearly some giant monster reptile
that could
hatch in the future? And where the fuck does the first one go? Is it just flying through space now? Is it going to eat planets? It must need a lot of food because it's vast and the doctor's fine to just let it go.
I had not thought about that at all. That's a very, very good point. My sideways thumb is now wibbling. Wobbling, I mean. Okay, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, let's take a trip to the
Mummy on the Orient Express. Right.
Already I can sense in your tone some... and that sigh. The evidence is mounting. Where are you going with this?
No, I think you should start this one, dude.
Okay.
What's this episode about?
I remember that Frank Skinner has an old-timey train uniform on this episode.
Who's Frank Skinner?
Frank Skinner is a comedian from Birmingham who has done stand-up and presented various shows. Currently, he can be found on Room 101. He's a sort of BBC personality face. He's been around for a while. He's quite funny.
Okay. He's the conductor or something?
Yeah, he has a simple dramatic role. A very calm conductor in this episode, while everybody else is experiencing rising levels of panic because people are being picked off on this nice cruise through space
by some crazy mummy ghost type thing.
Yeah.
I've forgotten. Can everyone see the mummy, or is it just the person who's being hunted?
It is just the person who's being hunted, and they only get to see the mummy for a finite number of seconds before the mummy annihilates them.
Yeah, it's like 12 seconds after you see it, you're dead, or something. Yeah. Something to that effect.
And so they're just staring forward into space, or trying to get away, and everyone else in the carriage, they can't physically engage with the mummy. It's just thin air to them.
Yeah.
And so it is completely lethal.
Okay, and then towards the end, we find out, obviously, it can't be a ghost. There has to be a sci-fi explanation, which I think kind of nicely ties to what we were talking about in the last episode.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the better sci-fi explanations.
Oh, that's true, yeah. It's like a soldier or something. It is a soldier.
Yeah, an ancient soldier from thousands of years ago programmed to behave in a certain way.
Yeah.
So the doctor...
And he's lost in some sort of... Is he lost in a time loop? Or he's lost between dimensions?
I think he still thinks he's at war.
Yeah,
so everyone
definitely.
He engages with... is a potential adversary, and so they need to find some sort of safe word for the mummy to just stop his rampage.
Yeah, and it's something to the effect of, we surrender, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Spoilers!
Oh, sorry. Well, this is going to be spoiler-tastic, I think. Yeah, I think everyone has already caught on to that by now.
They've probably seen it a lot more recently than we have.
Also probably true. Okay, so there are a few things, obviously, that are being referenced here. There is Murder on the Orient Express. We've got it in the title. But like, the atmosphere on the train is very much of Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes, or indeed that Adventure Time episode where for Finn's birthday they go on a train and everybody starts dying because of a creepy conductor.
Oh! I've never seen Adventure Time! What? We talked about this last week, dude. I totally need to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and then obviously, like, every mummy movie ever.
There's another sigh.
God damn it.
At least two.
I didn't like this episode.
No?
Well, I mean, I like part of it. For once, I did like the fact that we got a sci-fi explanation for something that otherwise seems to be supernatural. As you said, it is probably... It's one of the best, if not the best, sci-fi explanation for something paranormal so far.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. But the whole thing seemed to be just a pastiche of Murder on the Orient Express and every other story like it.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. The whole thing seemed like a parody rather than a serious thing.
I remember.
It's like putting Doctor Who on a bloody Titanic ship.
Who would do such a thing?
Exactly. Why would you do that? You don't do that. That just ruins it. Why would you do that?
Anyway. We haven't got to that one yet,
have
we?
I'm so annoyed. No, that's not even this series. But yeah, anyway.
I was going to say, actually, where do they go now that they've done the Titanic and the Orient Express? Iconic travel modes of transport. They're sort of running out, aren't they? Really?
What else is there? Oh, Zeppelin. Let's go full...
Yeah, Hindenburg on their ass.
Yeah, let's do that. Doctor Who on the Hindenburg.
Kill the Hindenburg. We should write this.
We're going to write that.
pitch this for series 7.
We are absolutely writing that.
The only problem is, well, I suppose actually it's not a problem because the Titanic resulted in thousands of deaths.
Yeah.
So the Hindenburg, comparatively, is a minor disaster. So, sure. You know, maybe the doctor can save them all before
But it's the same shtick of like, okay, if you have a spaceship that is like a luxury cruiser and you name it Titanic, you know that before the end of the episode, that ship is going to have sunk. Well, like crashed or whatever. It's a spaceship, so it's not going to sink. But yeah, it is definitely not going to make it to the end of the... It's not going to make it to the destination, is what I'm trying to say. If you call a space blimp the Hindenburg, you know something bad is going to happen. So here you have an episode called Mummy on the Orient Express, and coincidentally it involves... Yeah, fine, the mummy, but it coincidentally involves everyone being picked off one by one in an atmosphere that is very, very reminiscent of Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't that much to hate about this one, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I've heard you say on previous podcasts, and I haven't been on
that. I know, that I like the budget versions of proper stories.
Exactly.
In fact, I even mentioned Murder on the Orient Express. Oh, you know what? I've shot myself in the foot here. I've been complaining about this by listing positive arguments. I'm still giving it a bit of a wobbly thumb, though.
Okay.
Yeah, it's too pastiche for me.
Well, I think you sold it short, and I'm going to give it a thumb up.
Nice. Nice one.
Next... Flatline.
Okay, I think Flatline is a really, really interesting story. This is the one that starts off with the TARDIS being, like, tiny, right?
Mm-hmm. And they're squeezing out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Their typical sort of wasteland landing site.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps shrinking, and she has to, like, carry it around in her purse, and she takes it out every now and then, and he, like, stretches his entire arm through the TARDIS doors. It's hilarious. It's really fun. It's fun that they've taken... They're no longer just toying with the dimension of time. They're now toying with the three dimensions of space. It is interesting.
Yeah, well, as before, the Doctor can be fun once every three episodes. So, this is number 9.
Bing bong. Sup, podcast land. It is I, Future Bonken. That's right. Here just with a super duper quick note about something that really ought to have crossed my mind when the Drew Hammer and I sat down to record this bonus episode, but for time lord knows what reason, it did not. What I wanted to say was, on Who Back When, we have actually encountered the phenomenon of the spatial dimensions of the TARDIS somehow being... manipulated, except not the spatial dimensions of the TARDIS, but of a TARDIS, namely the TARDIS Mark IV belonging to the Meddling Monk in the classic William Hartnell serial The Time Meddler, in which the Doctor, the first Doctor that is, disables, dismantles, removes, in some way manipulates the dimensional wibbly-wobbly circuitry. Sorry, by the way, this is a massive spoiler. You should probably fast forward if this is not something you want to hear right now. But the Doctor either removes or disables or dismantles that circuitry in such a way that that narrative element of, oh my god, it's bigger on the inside, no longer applies. In fact, we get that wonderful image of the monk looking into his TARDIS, and the inside of the TARDIS Mark IV being exactly as large, or in this case, small, as, thanks to the chameleon circuitry, the outside of the TARDIS would have you believe it is. It's fantastic. There's a great screenshot of the monk looking into his tiny little TARDIS and, like, the TARDIS console being around about the size of his head. It's great. And you can actually see a screenshot of that on whobackwhen.com. Definitely have a listen to our review as well. Yeah. The Time Meddler. Anyway, that's it for now. Let's get back to this bonus episode. Ciao. Okay, isn't it also an awesome foe? Isn't the foe in this episode really awesome?
Foe?
Isn't there like a weird one-dimensional alien...
Oh, foe! Sorry, you said foe and I thought F-A-U-X. Please, cut
this. Sorry.
Oh my god. Yes, the Boneless! I like that the Doctor had a flourish there at the end. Thanks, Pete. See you again, mate.
Thank you.
And it was a decent name. It was incredibly creepy, all the stuff on the walls, because...
The so-called graffiti and people, like, washing them off.
Yeah, and, you know...
very creepy stuff.
And, again, another little scientific device was seeing the nervous system on the wall and the Doctor having the knowledge to figure out exactly what that was from his experience around the universe. That, to me, seemed like a really good Doctor Who moment. That is what the Doctor can bring.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of just...
He's been around so long.
Yeah.
Through experience alone, he is just unstoppable. He is a genius.
Yeah, instead of just having someone go, oh, I can sense he's clever, that was a really easily communicated, the Doctor has an encyclopedic knowledge of the universe, so don't fuck with him because he will see what you're doing.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, we do get a lot of examples of this, but normally his deductions are also made up. Like, they're not rooted in something that you or I theoretically could find out. It's more like he looks at some weird shining purple object and he goes, well, obviously I know what that is. It's a grab fraw from the planet Megalos 17.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes perfect sense within the universe. But this is actually something tangible, something real. Awesome stuff.
Hmm.
I cannot remember how he beats the foe, to be honest. I do not remember how this episode ends.
I remember that the TARDIS goes into siege mode, which seems a new thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I do remember that.
And it rattles around on a railway line because they're in a tunnel.
Yes, and like these weird one-dimensional zombie-esque creatures start like approaching it.
Yes, they start entering the third dimension.
Yes, exactly. That's what it is. And it's super cool because he paints a doorknob on something, or he paints a door and all of a sudden that works, right? Mm. Am I misremembering this? Maybe I'm misremembering.
Again, within the setup of the story, it's a very clever device.
It's very clever.
So, yeah, I think this is pretty good. I'm not sure the Boneless was the best name, but it's a decent name.
I don't mind it.
It shows the Doctor off in his becaped glory to the maximum possible extent. At the end, he gets to stand with his legs wide apart, brandishing his sonic screwdriver and his immense authority. And yeah, that really stuck with me. I like this one.
Very good.
I'm going to thumb it right up.
Thumb it even further up. I'll help you. Here's another thumb. How do you like two thumbs up this episode? Excellent. Shall we just move on? Let's move on.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
The next one is In the Forest of the Night.
The night. Okay. All right. You start with this one. I've got one massive bone to pick with this one.
Okay, you wake up and, oh goodness, there are a lot of trees around today. But that's all right, because actually, it's just the Earth taking care of itself. Or the trees taking care of the Earth, rather. It's a nice symbiotic relationship they got going on there. People just calm down. The trees will take care of everything.
Which this is a nice. Danny Pink heavy episode.
Is he the bone you're picking?
No, it's not.
It's not his bone?
No, I'm not picking Danny Pink's bone.
Okay.
He wishes. No, I was going to say, though, this is a very Danny Pink heavy episode, and I'm not a huge Danny Pink fan.
As we established last week.
We did indeed. There are also too many kids.
He works in school.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of kids en masse on TV or in films. I think they should be CGI'd. That's what we have CGI for, people.
Like elf armies.
Yes.
Kids have no more to offer than just elf killing machines.
Okay, maybe it's not quite that drastic. I don't mind kids in films and whatever, but the whole thing is just a school trip and it was a little bit too much of that. The Doctor is great in it, though.
You hate the kids getting to leave the school, don't you? They should be in school, studying for exams.
Yeah, are you telling me that these kids aren't lacking in education?
Well, I think they're gaining a wider education. You know, this kid's gone to the moon. These kids are learning how to survive because, by the way, all the fucking wild animals you can imagine are now roaming the forest.
Oh, yeah, why is that? Is that London Zoo is, I don't know, what? Like, everything's escaped from the London Zoo?
It goes with Peril in the Jungle.
Sure. Well, before you press record, I did say this. I actually kind of like this episode. I think it's a charming one. I don't like the fact that we get so much of Danny Pink just being Danny Pink.
Yeah. Although, to be fair to the guy, that's what he's there for.
That is what... Yeah, but yeah, I'm not complaining about the actor. I'm complaining about the character, the way that he's been written. I'm not a huge fan.
I am getting reminiscences from the dark recesses of my mind that actually I quite liked Danny Pink in this episode, because when he is interacting with the kids as a teacher, that is showing one of his better sides.
Okay.
It's not showing his grumpy carping on at Clara's side because she's not doing exactly what he wants. He's actually...
Isn't there also...
Well, just that he's actually a guy who relates to people and cares about children and has a number of good qualities in that area.
Isn't there also an element of, no, Clara, we're not doing what you want to do. We're not jeopardizing the kids' safety. We're not doing what this crazy old man wants us to do. We're going to do what I think is best because I was in the military and I know survival tactics.
Yeah, that's fair as well.
Oh, you
countered me.
Oh, I don't know if I like that. See, I think that's kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Biggest turd of this episode, though. And right. Bear in mind, I am going to give this a thumbs up. Wobbly thumbs up. The biggest turd is something, actually, that we discussed in the Last Christmas bonus episode thingy. The review. The Christmas special. The Capaldi Christmas special bonus review that we did. When we went through all these episodes, when we got to this bit, I said the exact same thing, I think. There's a girl living in a goddamn bush.
Say what?
Towards the end, all the plants are receding. Thank God they didn't follow, like, the M. Night Shyamalan ding-dong procedure. Have you seen The Happening?
No.
Pretty much the same, just shit. But in that one, the plants are taking over, they're like killing people. They're getting people to kill themselves. Whatever, yeah, don't watch The Happening. I've spoiled it anyway. Towards the end of this episode, all the plants are receding, and we see there's this girl, I think the bigger sister, the older sister of one of the kids in the class or something, I think, is suddenly just under this bush. Like, the bush disappears, and there she is, and she's been gone for like a year. So you have two options here. You have option one, she's been living in a fucking bush for a year. Possibly unlikely. Option two, she clearly got addicted to crack, has been blowing dongs left, right and centre. She's been like...
Hang on a minute, how old is this girl?
I don't know. She's the older sister, so I'm presuming she's legal.
Right, that's just what I wanted to establish there. We think she's an adult. That's the best we can remember.
No, she is like a... I don't know. Okay, I honestly cannot remember.
Maybe look this up before you put the episode together.
Okay, fine. Regardless, clearly this person got addicted to drugs and went off to be a vagabond.
Yeah.
And then she came back and... Wait, hang on. So are we to believe that she came back just as this bush appeared and like captured her? Like, trapped her inside a bush?
Maybe that's what made her tire of her vagabondage.
Good word. No, it's nonsense. It's, yes. It is utter nonsense. Does no one just go, wait, hang on, can we please get you tested? Like,
you must have all the diseases by now.
All the diseases. All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's another one of those things where the narrative of a Doctor Who episode demands a moment of emotional piquancy at the end.
Oh, nice.
And so, here we go, let's just ship one out, and never mind that it doesn't make any sense in the wider context of anything.
Yeah, but that's exactly what the problem is.
Yeah, I know, and that happens a lot, is what I'm saying.
You know what? They could have made it better, though.
Yeah.
She could have still been in that goddamn bush, and I wouldn't have cared if she had been shivering, had, like, needle marks down her arm, and the mum just goes like, oh my god, I've been so worried about you. You've been away for a year. Come with me. We're going to clean you off. We're going to wash all the semen and crack off you.
Just hose her down.
Things are going to be all right. Yeah?
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot of therapy, but then you're going back to school. Great! Right?
Except
great.
She's an adult, so just back to a regular job. Let's hope.
Okay, anyway, wobbly thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That.
Because someone doesn't allow 45 degree angle thumbs anymore.
Well, I'm going to go with a thumb in the middle this one.
Oh, all right, then.
Yeah.
Fine. Be that way.
It was nice. I like trees, but it could have been better.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
That was my Twitter review, right?
Next up, Dark Water. And we did say, or you said rather, maybe Dark Water and the last one in the series, Death in Heaven, should be
Death
reviewed together.
Heaven. Sorry.
Beautiful.
Yes. All the 90s tracks are coming out for for this series.
All right, take it away.
Dark Water. Well, finally, we're getting somewhere with the afterlife grand reveal.
Yeah.
And Missy and... Okay, let's stop right there and say, did anyone think Missy was anything other than a Lady Master at this point?
No, I think it was fairly clear.
Yeah, because usually they do a better job of misleading you.
Misdirection.
Misdirection, yes. With several different plot points and teasers and call-throughs that are so opaque that the only possible theories seem ridiculously tendentious and implausible. But this time, it was just like, yeah.
Yeah, clearly.
Missy, that's her name. You know what that sounds like.
Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing, though.
No?
I mean, sure, I would have been more pleasantly surprised had I actually been surprised. But, I mean, she does a great job. She's a great incarnation of the Master.
Yeah.
I think so.
She's a little bit unhinged with some flirtatiousness, I suppose.
Sure.
I have a deeper problem with all of this.
Okay, what is
that? Which is that, spoiler alert for when the Master is introduced into New Who, obviously you all know where this is going, Derek Jacobi, a great actor of many decades standing and brilliant.
By goddamn Claudius.
Yes. Claudius himself was called upon to be the Master. He didn't know he was the Master for most of the time. And then just as he's beginning to remember and embrace his evil, and I'm thinking, holy shit, let's just have the next series of Doctor Who be Derek Jacobi as the Master against Tennant again and again and again and again and again and again.
And that would have been epic.
I would have...
It's fantastic.
Yes, that would have been amazing. And then immediately, oh, look, Derek Jacobi, you can go along for years, but when we need someone else in the role, a really obvious weakness, and John Sim is immediately the replacement, and he's okay.
I sort of remember liking John Sim.
Yeah, I've got nothing against John Sim, and I've got nothing against...
Do you not think that they picked John Sim because Tennant was a little bit of a heartthrob and they needed the dark equivalent of that? They
Absolutely.
Needed another good-looking young man?
That is precisely what they're doing, and that also annoyed me, and I should save this for the discussion in the appropriate time.
But, hang on, how does that fit in here? Are you now saying, like, you would have rather had, let's say, Derek Jacobi versus Peter Capaldi?
Yes, I'm still annoyed. Still, that Derek Jacobi is not the Master, because the Master comes from classics with this great presence. And I'm not saying that John Sim and... What's her name? Michelle Gomez.
That's it.
She's been in so much stuff. Bad Education, The Book Group. It's not like I don't know who she is. I just can't remember her name. Michelle, you're a good actress. You did a good job. I just... have...
Michelle, I think I've only seen you in Doctor Who. I thought you were fantastic.
Yeah, I just have such a crush on Derek Jacobi being the Master he'd never... ever got to be.
Yeah, it is a bit of a shame because he was barely there. He was barely in it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like a waste of a good actor.
And also there was the chance for intergenerational dynamics in Doctor Who. I was like, make everyone young.
Not in the Tennant era.
Yeah. So, I was just explaining, to explain why I just wasted another 5 minutes of your time off topic, why I didn't wholeheartedly embrace Michelle Gomez as Missy, just as...
Because she's not Derek Jacobi.
Yeah, until Derek Jacobi
is retconned. That the next incarnation of the Master is also not going to be up to spec because he's not, or she's not going to be Derek Jacobi.
Well, unless they...
Well, maybe they could have Derek Jacobi.
Or Ian McKellen, or Patrick Stewart. Someone, well, Patrick Stewart was in I, Claudius as well, so someone... of...
Holy shit.
Yeah, why not, eh?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Patrick Stewart as the Master.
Oh, that would... Oh, he would be fantastic.
Wouldn't he, though?
Are you kidding me? He would be amazing.
I'm not kidding you at all.
Okay, so here's what we're doing. We're writing a Hindenburg Doctor Who adventure with Patrick Stewart as the Master.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Where the fuck were we?
I cannot remember. So,
Missy.
So, all right. What else about this episode? Because to me, the two stories, they do kind of bleed together.
Okay, you've got...
I don't really remember. Okay, hang on. Does this episode start with Mr. Pink dying?
He dies
in one of these episodes.
He is certainly dead for a large part of the first episode. I don't know if he dies right at the beginning. I can't even remember how he dies.
I think he basically goes, okay, holy crap, Podcast Land is up in riots right now. I do not remember this correctly, probably.
We should get this right, shouldn't we?
Okay, let's do that.
He's on the phone. Does he? Yeah, he just gets run over on the road.
Just as she's about to... Oh, yeah, Clara's been lying to Pink. She's been saying, like, oh, actually, I'm doing... some other thing, I'm just hanging out.
Yeah, and I'm not doing the Doctor.
Exactly, except she's off on adventures with Doc, and just as she's about to come clean, boom, Danny Pink gets run over and dies.
Yeah, because shit happens in a meaningless universe such
sure.
as this.
Well, I mean, stuff does happen. People do actually get run over.
Oh god, I know someone who's been run over, yeah.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Moving on,
yeah. Okay, fine. So what do we get in the story? We get Danny Pink, quote-unquote, facing his demons. He meets Missy, he goes to the afterlife, whatever it is.
Has a long chat with Chris Addison.
Oh, yes! Yes! You mentioned this earlier. Exactly. Also from the thick of it. Yeah. Which is crazy, because I thought he was a kid, and you pointed out that he's in his 40s.
Oh, yeah. He's just incredibly youthful looking.
Well done, Chris Addison.
Yeah. Chris Addison,
well done.
We salute you, and what are you doing, and can we get some?
Yeah, exactly. Whatever you're doing, it is working for you. Well done. Yeah. And he's hilarious in that scene as well. He's very much the same. Not really the same character, but he's kind of similar.
Yeah, he's a bit chippy.
Yeah.
He's quick with a quip.
Yeah, and a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Regardless, Pink gets to see the afterlife. He faces his demons in the form of this kid that he accidentally shot.
Afghanistani collateral damage.
Yeah. And at the end of this episode, we also find out what the actual fuck is going on.
Yes.
So basically, Missy's plan has been to not only anyone who dies right now, but anyone, it seems, who has died ever.
Yes, and whose body is still around.
Exactly, who hasn't decomposed completely, has been celibate.
Yeah.
How did she do that?
Well, they released the spores into the air, didn't they? And the spores just go and find out the latent body matter in the Earth and form the Cybermen bodies around it.
Oh, god damn it, that makes perfect sense. All right,
of course. in a universe of implausible science, it's not so ridiculous. The thing that bothers me about this, and that bothered people at the time, was not so much that the afterlife is not revealed to be as religions would have it.
Well,
traditionally,
obviously,
because in this universe,
it's Doctor Who.
Yes.
Yeah.
But to replace the idea of souls floating away to some extra dimension beyond the universe with the ridiculous idea that it just sits around with your body in the ground that is patently dead and inanimate, waiting for a plot device like this, that people you've lost and who you've put in the ground or that you sent up the chimney are still in the ground or up the chimney somewhere and could be revived. And that's a distressing idea.
I agree. Not in this one, in the next episode, in whatever it's called, Death in Heaven, the Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart makes an appearance as a Cyberman. He clearly has his complete personality left. He clearly has his memories left. He clearly is the Brigadier, even though he has no lines. He does something heroic and he salutes and yada yada, right?
Yeah.
He's been dead how long? Like, ages.
Well, since Tennant tried to call him at the end of his era.
Yeah, you mentioned that as well. Yeah, fantastic reference, by the way. But you're right. That's creepy as shit. All these people who have died, who, according to Doctor Who, could just carry on having a life if, you know, just a healthy application of technology were introduced.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And you will have had kids who have lost their parents and are watching this.
Yeah.
And
who then go like, yeah, well, just cyber them. Just like, I mean, they're still in the ground. They've only been dead for 10 years. There's still time.
Yeah, and they have to be disappointed all over again. Not only have their parents died, they've got to be told, no, actually, this is all bullshit.
Yeah.
You just got to go back to grieving like you were before. Sorry.
Oh, this is... That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's very dark. I didn't consider that at all.
No, and to put to one side almost the point about this doctor being rational and the universe being entirely bounded by scientific explanations, if you're going to set that up, then come up with some good alternative theories for the afterlife rather than just they're just sitting in the ground. Nobody thought of this before. They also said that in the episode. Of course people have thought of that before, but then they've dismissed it because it's a terrible idea.
How come? I mean, maybe this was actually what you were referring to before. Maybe I misunderstood you, but there is Pink gets the chance to, like, oh, he can come back if he wants to, and instead he gives that chance to the little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were referring to before?
Could be.
Okay, well, if nothing, I assume that you were talking about, like, well, actually they're cybers, but they're still people, and they're working, right?
Yeah.
In this case, it's, you can come back completely. Like, you can be a human being alive and well again, which is, like, the gift he gives this kid that he accidentally killed, or got killed, right? Why? Why does that chance exist? I mean, it's basically Missy giving him this information. Missy is giving him... It's misinformation. Missy is giving him this chance to... for salvation. What does she do
for
that?
For bodily resurrection, no less.
Yeah, why? Why does she do that? Also, why is there even a dialogue between Pink and the kid? Why has she built this virtual reality for people who have died and been cybered? You don't need it.
No.
In fact, she would probably be better off if she didn't do that. She, like, just have metal murder machines. That's it.
Yeah, billions of them.
Yeah.
End of story.
Whoa, question. Why do you even need a human body, dead or alive? Why not just build a robot army?
Well, are the Cybermen just robots in other stories?
No.
Well, then they wouldn't
be
Cybermen, would they?
They might as well be. Oh.
Yeah, this two-parter episode tries to do an awful lot, and in my opinion, doesn't quite measure up.
No, it doesn't really deliver, does it?
Yeah, to the ambition that Moffat must have had for the series to be bookended by the most epic subject yet. Death itself.
Yeah.
Doctor Who is dealing with
is
death
taking
and the
on
afterlife.
Death.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not convinced.
I'm not convinced either. Okay, got two more questions for you. Or two more things to raise, anyway. First off, Danny Pink is still very much Danny Pink inside a suit. Like, this is the first time we get to see this kind of Cyberman, where it's basically just a metal shell on a human being.
Yeah, a slightly discoloured human being.
Yeah, sure. But whereas before it was like a robot body, a human head, robot shell around the human head, right? But here it's like, it's actually Danny Pink inside. You take off a little piece of metal and you can see his arm or whatever, his chest or something. Danny Pink is in there.
It also reduces his scrap value. So, it's just short-sighted. What are you going to do after the invasion when you don't need the robots?
Okay, I kind of remember where I was going with that.
You're not going to make your money back.
What happens to all the Cybermen? Somehow Pink and the Brigadier together get all the Cybermen to fly into the sun? Or detonate in the air or something?
There is a detonation that I think puts an end to the cybering process.
Right.
And so you can take it as read that everyone's souls or whatever is left of them after death just goes back to being in the ground again, which is a lovely state of affairs.
Or the souls now are free to possibly go to the afterlife that may or may not exist, but we don't know. It isn't going to be discussed in Doctor Who.
Mm.
Sure. Now I remember what I was going to say. It had nothing to do with Danny Pink. No idea why I brought him up. Missy has, like, basically a remote control for all these cybers, right? And she's prepared to give control of the Cybermen army to the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why would she do that?
Well, they go back a long way, don't they? They have a little tête-à-tête about just how long they've known each other and how deeply they understand each other and the complexity of the psychological games they've played on each other over various incarnations. I don't remember objecting to that at the time. I thought it was quite good in that Missy has always won. Missy slash Master, always fucking with the Doctor.
Yeah.
And the Doctor, I think he projects some of that back again.
Sure. I don't know. Maybe to me, the Doctor-Master or Doctor-Missy relationship is more of a Sherlock Holmes-Moriarty relationship. Like, they will fight to the death. And in the end, they will cause each other's deaths, possibly. But
in this episode, they definitely don't.
No, they don't. No, it's the exact opposite. And somehow that doesn't really chime with my impression of them. It just goes against it. I was not a huge fan of that.
Okay.
Mm. Right, yes. The final note of the final episode. The Doctor claims to know exactly where to find Gallifrey.
Yeah.
He lies to Clara. I think we even find out that he lies to Clara. Like, he doesn't know. He claims that he knows. He's off on an adventure.
Yeah.
She lies to the Doctor and says, yeah, Danny's back and we're happy as kittens in the cotton candy factory. Whatever.
Is he back?
He's not back, because he died.
Of course.
He gave the chance to the kids. Somehow Clara finds out about that. Maybe he turns up at her place or something, in a dream or whatever.
Yeah, there's always a way for Danny Pink to come back and do a little more story development.
Sure.
They are ingenious at that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think a pretty significant chunk of the audience really, really digs that dynamic of Clara and Pink. And they're just thriving. They really want to see more of it. That's it, I think. Because at the moment, the story, what it is, or what the show is missing, is sort of a love story. Yeah. And that's the love story they're going to get, because they're not going to get the age-inappropriate version of 25-year-old girl meets 1,200-year-old man.
Mm.
Even though somehow that's okay in Twilight. But yeah.
Or in the 70s. So yes, this final scene where they're both lying to each other.
They're lying to each other. They both go off in separate directions.
Very Boy Meets World-esque.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it.
I liked it.
I liked it as well. I thought that was super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very realistic. Let's not have a happy ending. Let's have something that is actually really, really sad, but probably best for both of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was real and it was creative and it wasn't what you expected.
Exactly.
And Moffat, for all his detractors, I assume he wrote that scene and was building to it, but he does that sort of thing very well. There are a lot of things he does very well, and that's one of them.
Yeah. Incredibly well done.
Nice one, Moffat. You've extracted a positive final sounding note from us.
Yeah. Thumbs up, Moff. Thumbs up.
Well, yeah, okay. What are we giving these episodes then in thumb currency?
I'm giving both of them a thumbs up.
Yeah.
I view them as one episode. It's a double feature. I'm going to give it a thumbs up, despite all the shit that goes on in it.
And there's that nice callback.
Which callback?
The Cybermen on these steps.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes, of course. If you don't know what we're talking about, I mean, you could go to the BBC website. You could Google it. But I suggest you go to whobackwhen.com, where you'll find screenshots.
Good times. I'm going to give it a middly thumb.
Really?
Yeah, I am. I loved bits of the episode, like the reveal of the Cybermen in the dark water.
It's got that... I was going to say, it's a fantastic idea. Water that, or something that hides everything inorganic.
Yes.
That's incredibly clever.
Yes. This episode continued the streak of cleverness.
Yeah.
And I think this series of Doctor Who has, in some ways, been significantly more clever.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of the Tennant wishy-washiness and the Matt Smith just shouting at whoever's in his way this week.
Yeah, and always having some gizmo that acts as a deus ex machina.
Exactly.
Whereas in this one, do you also feel like there's more of a purpose now? Like, towards the end of this episode, it felt like, oh shit, now he does know where to go. Like, maybe he doesn't know exactly where Gallifrey is, but this is now the purpose. This is the trajectory of the show. Go find Gallifrey. Done.
Yeah, it's nice because perhaps hanging over the show in previous series was, hey, look, we're getting pretty near the magic number 12.
Yeah.
What's going to happen with that? That was sort of casting a shadow over the show's long-term future. And then the Doctor's name was teased for a long time. And now this is, as you say, the driving purpose.
Mm.
I like that. And there's a lot of potential in eventually finding Gallifrey and what the fuck happens then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am well on board for that.
Agreed. Same here.
So I can't wait for Series 9.
Oh my god, nor can I. I am so excited.
So yeah, Capaldi, he wasn't brilliantly received.
Was he not?
I don't think he was. Oh, he talks a little bit about the Doctor being a dickhead, and that wasn't what a lot of people were expecting. And you said, actually, the Doctor has a rich history of dickheadery throughout the incarnation.
He is part bastard, and it's great. Isn't that more interesting, though? That's so much more interesting.
Yeah, and what I mean is, people didn't warm to Capaldi very quickly, because there was complexity and unpredictability, and things that the Doctor doesn't usually do, which is another way of saying unpredictability, but there you go.
Sure.
But what I was getting to was that now we've reached the end and we're pretty satisfied with the first season of Capaldi and can't wait for a second.
I'm tremendously satisfied, and I'm so pleased that we have a more mature Doctor, someone who is not just mature, who is also a bit darker, a little bit damaged, and not afraid to cause some damage either.
Yeah, and the idea of a second season of him is a very exciting one with lots of potential.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
We hope you feel the same, Podcast Land.
Yeah.
And that we've G'd you up in the appropriate way.
I mean, we were going to go through some of the themes as well, but I feel like we kind of have discussed them anyway. There's Missy, we've discussed Missy ad nauseum.
She's coming back.
She is coming back. Have we sort of discussed... Yeah, I think so. In the last episode, did we not also discuss the Doctor's loathing of soldiers?
Yes.
We did indeed. We've talked about Clara and Pink... Ugh, ad nauseum, I am nauseous right now.
We have talked long enough.
We have. I love Capaldi. I think he's fantastic. After Death in Heaven came the Christmas episode, the first Capaldi Christmas special, Last Christmas. We have done a review of that already. Check it out. It's from Last Christmas. Listen to the review. It's a really funny one. Thank you so much for listening to us.
Yeah.
This was awesome. This was good fun.
What more is there to say? We have caught up with the present.
We have indeed. Who knows? Maybe we'll pop a review on iTunes after the 19th of September as well. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not already stalking the Droodmeister on Twitter, you most definitely should. He is at DrewBackWhen.
It's easy to remember.
It is easy to remember. It's a fantastic Twitter handle. Please follow him and tell him hi from me. I'm telling him hi from me right now. Hi, Drood.
Oh, hi, Ponkin. How do you spell that?
Well, good of you to ask. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
Yes, that's my Twitter handle, @Ponkin. Follow me. Catch us in the next episode. I have no idea in what order we're going to be dropping this, so the next episode might be a new Who, might be an audiobook Who, might be a classic. I have no idea.
Okay. Into the future.
To the time machine.
Bye.
Ciao. Okay, so we lost our shit a little bit towards the end, but I think that was great. Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who back when?